Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive right here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. Hope you're doing well. 15 days to kick off. The countdown continues. Football team back out there practicing today. I don't have much of a Rocky Top report for you.
There's rumors.
Rumors?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to start with reckless rumor and innuendo right off the top.
It's not reckless. I just heard it when I was talking, when I was listening to John and Cody and Cam talk sports earlier. Rumor has it that Squirrel White housed one today. 98 yards.
I'm telling you, man. We keep hearing this, well, nobody's really emerging. Not sure if Brew McCoy is going to be eligible thing. You got Hyatt in the slot, Tillman on the outside. Who's going to play the Javonte Payton role this year? I'm just saying, like, if McCoy isn't eligible or isn't good or, you know, whatever the case may be, and you're just struggling there,
right?
I take a look at moving Hyatt outside, and if Squirrel White is all he's cracked up to be, if all the
hype. Would
you
move Hyatt outside, or would you just put Squirrel out there? Out wide.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm not a coach, but like just getting your three best receivers on the field sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming I may be wrong. I think Tillman's the X, and I would imagine Squirrel would be the Z.
Do you have any idea what that means, or are you just
talking
video game talk right now?
No. No, you got
Why would you imagine Squirrel would be the Z?
Z's a burner.
That's the role of the Z. The Z's the burner.
Usually, I think that's the one you take your big deep shots with.
Okay, poking at you a little bit. Pretty exciting day, Bear. This is a big day in film history.
Is it?
Yeah, a couple of comedy classics were released on this date. One an oldie, the other. Well, I mean, to me, it's fairly recent, but it's 15 years old today.
2007. The Hangover?
Nope. 2007, 15 years ago today, Superbad came out.
Oh, McLovin.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one, huh?
Yeah. Really good.
Really raunchy. Just I remember, too, 2007, I was 27, so I was 10 years removed from high school, so I could still kind of relate.
Yeah.
It was still kind of relatable to me, but that was one I saw in the theater and just really came apart at.
For me, The Hangover is like that for me.
I don't remember if I saw that in the theater or not. And then the oldie, 43 years ago today, a film that was financed by the late, great George Harrison.
Oh.
Life of Brian.
Yeah, Monty Python, Life of Brian.
Another classic.
Those guys.
Not raunchy, but at the time, I mean, you're parodying the life of Jesus. I mean, it was controversial.
What was that one? I liked Life of Brian, and I liked the Holy Grail one. There was another one.
The Meaning of Life?
Was that the one where John Cleese was in the school? He was a teacher.
Teaching sex ed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get up here, Johnson. I can't really say what came next.
No, you can't really. I mean, we're treading on thin ice there as it is.
You got to be careful when you're quoting the Monty Python crew.
So it got me thinking, Bear, because remember a month ago we were ranking the various genres of films? Remember?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah.
We never did comedies.
We didn't, did we?
We never did. Our top five comedies.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that, like, our favorite comedies are going to be I'm not sure that everybody's going to agree with us.
Well, that's what makes good radio. I mean, what fun would it be if everybody agreed, right?
I'll tell you, one of my all-time favorites, Johnny Dangerously.
Never heard of that one.
No.
Michael Keaton.
Never heard of it. Well, I mean, you had some movie, one of your favorite sports movies. What was the one that nobody had ever heard of? It was like an old-timey.
Bingo Long and his Traveling All-Stars and Murder Kings.
Bingo Long.
That was an incredible movie, man. Had an all-star studded cast.
I kind of want to see it. I was just.
It's a great baseball movie.
It was just funny because you were just convinced that it was like a household movie and we were in the poll. And I think 7% of the respondents had heard of it. All right, so I'll give you guys time if you want to make your list. And I've already done this, and I've put a lot of thought in. This is what I did today.
You pre-gamed.
I thought about this long and hard, moved things around. Here are my top five comedies of all time. Number five, Superbad. And yes, my list is going to be a little bit older, and I have an interesting theory on comedies that I'll share with you afterwards. But this is the youngest. This is 15 years old now. This is the youngest comedy on my list, Superbad. Number four, Office Space.
It's a good one.
So funny. So one of the most quotable movies of all time. Good stuff. I mean, great characters.
Yeah.
Memorable comic characters. Several laugh-out-loud moments. Jennifer Aniston in her prime. I mean, come on.
Plenty of memes that have come through because of that still movie.
Very memeable. You can't go through a day without seeing a Bob meme, yeah. The Bobs, on social media. Number three, The Naked Gun.
Oh. Yeah, Leslie Nielsen just.
Frank Drebin.
Different level.
It was a movie, too. Like, I was pretty young when The Naked Gun came out, and some of that was adult humor, you know, there's a lot of sex jokes and stuff in it. But I still remember my dad, called me in one night. It was on HBO or something and showed me the baseball scene at the end of The Naked Gun. And just, I thought it was the greatest thing ever.
It's Enrico Palazzo.
Still love the baseball scene in The Naked Gun. Maybe the best sports scene of all time, of any movie, of any genre.
I can't go with you there.
Can you name one better?
Baseball movie?
Sports scene in any movie. Barry, I'm going to need some attention for it. A block, and you're already completely zoned out.
I'm looking up the top comedies to do my list. All right. That's it.
All right.
I know it wasn't Naked Gun. It was Airplane, but he has that delivery of a line that I feel like most people just could not muster up.
Leslie Nielsen?
Yeah. The fact, the whole bit where they say, "Surely that you can't be serious," is I am, and don't call me yeah. Shirley.
Well, that's Airplane.
Right. I know it was Airplane, but he had this delivery in all of those movies that I don't feel like a lot of people can match.
My favorite line in that one, he says, "Tell me something." He's like, "Well, the fog's getting thicker and Leon's getting larger." So many great lines in that one.
Number two, I'm going with Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's hard to pick a favorite. Well, I know some of that's played out. Marcus, I know you were totally the kid in middle school who could quote the whole Knights Who Say Knee routine because I was that kid, too.
We're the Knights Who Say Knee.
Total nerd. I'm there with you. It's a classic. I mean, this could easily be Life of Brian or The Meaning of Life, but you got to choose one Monty Python. I'll go with the most well-known one. Jared Garantano as the Black Knight was always one of my favorite scenes. And then number one, funniest movie of all time to me. I mean, how could it not be? Blazing Saddles.
That's a good one.
I did not have that at my number one.
It leads me to, this is what I was thinking. All these movies are a little bit older, right?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of what the funniest movies of the last 10 years or so are. And I don't want to get political here right off the top of the show, but I just feel all the political correctness, the wokeness, the whatever, it's killed the comedy, man. There's no way you could make Blazing Saddles. Not just the use of the N-word or whatever. It's the sex jokes, the raunchiness of it, there's all sorts of racial groups are skewered in that movie.
I mean, come on, you're talking about Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks. I mean, not very politically correct kinds of guys.
Did Pryor write that?
Yeah, he wrote a lot of it. A lot of the jokes and stuff. And he wanted to, he was supposed to be the star of it. But I think the story goes, the
who was it, Cleavon Little?
Yeah, I mean, he did a fantastic job, him and Gene Wilder.
You can't imagine that movie with somebody else in that role.
No. No, you can't. But I think the studio didn't want Pryor.
Well, he's too famous?
He's too controversial back then. I mean, he was a king. Back when that came out, he was a king of blue.
Hmm.
Said stuff that...
it's not like that movie was shying away from anything.
I mean, he was kind of controversial still at the time.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if Paul Mooney worked on that as well or what.
So they'll let him write it, but they won't let him act in it.
Yeah. I'll have to read... I read an article about... Honestly, it was like a month ago. Read an article online about it.
You could totally see Richard Pryor in the sheriff role, though, now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. Like, a lot of those, the really, really cringy jokes that most people in today's society, like, God, I mean, straight out of Richard Pryor's brain, man.
Oh, yeah.
So.
It's sad, though, man. Like, I don't, when was the last really funny movie that came out? I had to go back to Superbad. Is there anything else lately that is just laugh out loud funny movies?
Horrible Bosses was pretty funny.
That was pretty good. And I mean, that's 10 years old.
Is it really?
I think so. Second one was pretty good too.
Rat Race. I guess that's old too though, isn't it?
I've never seen it.
You never saw Rat Race?
Mm-mm. That was the one was a remake of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, right?
Yeah. Which,
fantastic.
The original or the, mm-hmm. Really?
Oh. Love it.
I can give you my top five pretty much now.
Jonathan Winters is still one of my favorites.
Oh, man, so great. Where he was in all those football blooper videos that came out in the 80s.
Horrible Bosses, by the way, came out in 2011. So, yeah, it's been 11 years.
All right, Bear, what do you got? Your top five. Give it to me.
Number five, The Big Lebowski.
See, that was my honorable mention. Is it a comedy?
Hell yes.
I mean, it's funny, but it's like it's a mystery, a whodunit, kind of a film noir. I don't know, man. Coen Brothers, it's just kind of defies all genre. It's like, you know, Raising Arizona is the same directors. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a comedy.
You got number four, The Hangover.
Okay.
Classic rib tickling movie.
Very good.
Number three, Inglourious Bastards.
That's not a comedy.
That was a feel good comedy, man.
That's not a comedy.
You saw him digging that big Bowie knife into that
guy's
head.
Just absolutely hysterical. What are you doing, man? You're making a mockery of the game. Yes, there are a handful of funny moments in that movie, but it's not a comedy.
All right, fine. I'll take that one off the list.
Thank you.
Where was it? Is this? Yeah, it should be three, right? Instead of that one. I had Office Space at number three.
Okay.
Number two, Animal House.
It's classic. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? I tweet that. Every time that Tennessee's like losing and showing signs of life, like you'd think there might be a comeback, I will tweet, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? And it's amazing how many people don't get the reference.
Okay, the guy who played Stork.
Which one was that?
The guy said, y'all are acting like a bunch of morons. That guy was the genius behind National Lampoon, the magazine, and then Caddyshack, Animal House, all that stuff.
Storkman.
Doug, I cannot remember his last name. I watched the National Lampoon.
Douglas Kenny?
Yeah, yeah. And at number one, let there be no doubt, it's a mad, 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 mad world.
Really? I've never seen that.
Oh, you'd love it, man.
My grandmother had that on VHS tape, and it was one of those things where it was so big. I think it was on like four VHS, maybe two.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was a long-ass movie.
It was so long,
yeah.
It was just like intimidating to me. I never wanted to sit down and watch it.
Dude, when I worked with troubled kids back when I was, you know, in college. It's like kind of like a group home setting. And we would watch one or two movies every night after dinner. It's a mad, mad, mad world. Or here's another one, my other honorable mention, Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, I thought about that one too. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Probably the best of the Chevy Chase Vacation movies, although they're all good, and I will include Vegas Vacation on that list.
What was it, Mr. Papadopoulos?
Mr. Papa Giorgio.
Yeah, that's it. Nick Papa Giorgio. I'm sure in
Ellen ran off with Neil with
Wayne Newton.
Wayne Newton.
See, like, I'm looking over this list here. Like, I wouldn't consider Dazed and Confused a comedy. I mean, it's got some hilarious moments, but that's more of a...
I would consider it more of a comedy than Inglourious Basterds.
There's just something that makes me giggle about Nazis getting the swastika carved into their foreheads. I think they should have really done that.
Are people calling like, why are you guys talking about movies? Talk about sports. Is that what's going on back there?
I would encourage them to start their own show, build it up like you have, and you can talk about whatever you want.
What do you want to talk about? It's August 17th. What do you want? Cheyenne LaBruza wasn't at practice today. What do you want to talk about? Ohio State's third string running back is out for the season with a torn ACL. I mean, really? Really, what do you want to break down the left tackle situation again? We did that for at least the fifth time yesterday. We want to make it number six.
Ooh,
I'm sorry. I went down the comedy rabbit hole today. It's what I want to talk about. If you don't want to listen, fine, don't listen. We'll talk about
five. It's so hard with five because I just saw another one.
We do have Callahan coming on here in just a minute. Ryan Callahan will talk all things Tennessee football with us here in just a minute.
You want me to go with my top five after Callahan?
Yeah, you hold your. I'm interested to, as we peel back another layer of the onion that is young Marcus Young. See what else is under there. You know, there's going to be a weird one on or two on his list.
I don't know.
Stay with us. It is The Drive, Fan Run Radio. We're back with more right after this. Sorry, fumble.
What are you doing over there?
Drop the phone, man.
Oh, I thought that chair was Brett. Your chair's starting to list, too.
It's squeaky. Put some more oil on this thing.
Yeah.
Put some oil on it.
I'm going to need some bracing for that other one.
It's a lot of dudes sitting in that chair through the day. Just going to say. I mean, Marcus might be the lightest one over there. Was that uncalled for? I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, he's not.
Bears called me out on 3-and-out for being one of the heavy ones in this chair. So.
Yikes.
I don't know. I mean, Chris has packed it on past 9 months, so I think he may have got you beat. But anyhow.
Moving along, we've got Ryan Callahan standing by. Go Vols 247 on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. Good afternoon, Ryan. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing well. How are you guys?
Hey, doing very well, Ryan. I'll throw you a curveball here right off the top. We were just talking about in honor of 15 years ago today, the comedy classic Superbad came out. I was just wondering if you have a favorite comedy. Like if there were, let me say, it's movie night at the Callahan House. Ryan gets to choose the funniest movie. What's your go-to for a few belly laughs?
Oh, man. That one I feel like changes every few years, but I'll go with the one that I seem to find most on cable these days and just can never turn it off no matter how many times I see it, Step Brothers. I feel like it's underrated in that sort of that generation of classics from that decade.
Oh, Catalina Wine Mixer.
So good. I thought you were going to go with Jeremy Pruitt's 2020 season there for a second. I mean, he kept trotting JG out there. That got into dark comedy at a certain point. But no, Step Brothers, definitely a classic. Ryan Callahan, Go Vols 247 with us this afternoon on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. Ryan, you've been to most of the practices throughout camp. And before we pick your mind on some recruiting stuff that's happened this week, when you're out there watching practice – and you're going through the different position groups, is there a group out there where you look at them and you just think, man, that's a position that they desperately need more quality players at?
You know, I wouldn't say there's any that stands out quite that much. I think certainly compared to last year, it's a better-looking roster across the board. Now, they still have a lot of work to do. I think they're still a couple years away probably from having the roster anywhere close to where they'd like it to be in the long run. But they do look better. And I think now that we've seen this full freshman class on campus, all the newcomers, including the transfers, are here. It's a clearly deeper-looking team, and there's not really any one position group that you look at and say, man, they might be in trouble there. But, I mean, clearly they need more depth at some spots. You know, linebacker is a group where, you know, they've got that group of seniors, and then, you know, Elijah Herring is a freshman. That's a better-looking group, but, you know, you see that, you look ahead to next year, and depending on which of those seniors ends up leaving, that's a thinner position probably than they'd like it to be, depending on what happens after this year. Running back, they need more depth. You know, there's some positions like that where you say they still need to do some work. But overall, I think it's a better-looking roster, and that's kind of the first thing that I always look for on the first day of camp, you know, especially going into year two of kind of a rebuild. You want to see how much progress has been made on the roster, and I think it is better-looking across the board.
Ryan, what's the holdup on Brew McCoy? It seems like there's one of these guys on Tennessee's roster every year where they're just kind of waiting it out till the very last minute to find out whether or not he's going to be eligible. Obviously, every situation is unique. What's the holdup with Brew right now?
Well, it's complicated for him. I think the main problem there is he's had multiple transfers in his past. You know, he started off his college career at USC, quickly transferred to Texas, goes back to USC, and then obviously I think at least a contributing factor is the way things ended at USC, and just sort of the limbo he was in there, you know, not really being cleared to rejoin the team and things like that. So it's been a tricky situation there for Tennessee to navigate, and I don't think it's gotten as much help as it would like from USC on that end of things. At the same time, I don't get the sense that it's a situation where they have to have USC. USC is not the only reason or not the only way that Brew McCoy can be cleared. You know, they don't have to have that help per se, but that would be one way to speed things up. And I don't think they've gotten as much help as they would like on that end of things. So I think it's been tricky for a couple different reasons, but I think the big thing is the multiple transfers from what I've been told, just the fact that he has already moved twice, going to Texas and then back to USC and now to Tennessee. So even though those happened in kind of different eras in terms of transfers, I think that's at least one of the holdups that has made that one maybe more complicated than they expected. And I'm not saying it's a concern to the point that people really should be fretting, but it's one of those things that until it's resolved, you can't shrug it off. And the farther we get into camp, and obviously the closer to the season opener, the more you do worry about whether it's going to become an issue now closer to the start of the season.
Yeah, 2 weeks out here tomorrow. I mean, do you have a gut feeling on that one, Ryan, one way or the other? Care to hazard a guess at what ultimately transpires there?
You know, I don't, because it's just one of those situations where there was a lot of confidence or optimism, however you want to put it, just a week or two ago, but it's one of those things that you have to keep asking about, because until you have that yes answer, you just don't know what's going to happen. And we've seen these go up to the last minute before, before season opener. There was the deal a couple of years ago where Cade Mays was held up from playing in the season opener, you know, things like that. So there's no definite time frame on when these things might be resolved, and there's no guarantee that it's going to work out the way Tennessee expects. So I think there's still a pretty good chance that it's okay, but you know, I would have said the same thing a couple weeks ago, and the bottom line is you just don't know for sure. So it's to me that obviously the more time passes, the more of a concern it becomes, I think, and we're now a little more than 2 weeks away from the season opener. So I think anything is still possible, because it is just such a yes or no thing. You know, there's not much gray area on these things, and you don't know how it's going to end up, you know, playing out in the end. Just like that Cade Mays situation a couple of years ago, you really didn't know that was going to be the issue it was until it just kind of became one by dragging out longer than expected.
Ryan Callahan with us, GoVols 247 on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. And Ryan, a big recruiting week for the Vols this week, as well as they land not one but two pretty solid cornerback prospects. That's an area of need, with maybe some players matriculating after this season, and just a general need to upgrade the talent position there. Tell us about the two guys they get, Matthews out of Baton Rouge and Gibson from Alabama.
These are two big pickups for Tennessee. I know people will kind of glance at the star ratings, and you know, Jordan Matthews is the one that catches your eye as the four-star top 200 player nationally. And that was obviously the headliner with good reason, because you're beating out Texas for a guy that's got more than 30 offers and is highly regarded and has been for a while. But to me, Ricky Gibson is a very good pickup on his own. And just for Tennessee to get him, you know, that would have given Tennessee a pretty nice tandem, I thought, at cornerback with Christian Conyer from Bowling Green, Kentucky, already committed from about a month earlier. And now you throw in Jordan Matthews, and this, I think, looks like Tennessee's best cornerback class, if they can hold on to these guys that they will have signed in years. It's a really good group. You've got three guys that are all 6 feet or taller that can all run. And Christian Conyer hasn't been timed to know this for sure, but just based on what I know about his speed, I think those are all three guys that would run in the 4.5s or lower in the 40-yard dash, and 6 feet and taller in all three of those cases. Jordan Matthews about almost 6'1.5", Christian Conyer around 6'1", Ricky Gibson at 6 feet. So that's a pretty impressive group athletically. Some of those guys more raw than others, and a couple of them maybe ready to compete for early playing time. But that's a group that, to me, you look at those three down the road, that they've got a chance to kind of reshape Tennessee's secondary and really give them something to build on at that position where they've really struggled to land some good players and top targets in recent years. So you beat out Georgia, and that was an absolute win for Tennessee. No question Georgia would have taken Ricky Gibson, and since you beat out Georgia for anybody, and that's a big deal. But even a guy that was going to be, you know, kind of a fifth or sixth defensive back in Georgia's class, that's still a really, really nice win. And then they just stunned Texas by beating out the Longhorns for Jordan Matthews after they were kind of viewed as the favorites for months. Tennessee kind of sneaks in there and shocks everybody by winning that one. So two just huge wins against quality competition, and it makes that position group, I think, one of the strengths of this class for Tennessee.
Isn't it interesting, Ryan, how, you know, people gave Jeremy Pruitt, such a hard time for not being able to recruit and sign elite defensive back talent, and he was our secondary guy, right? I mean, that was his thing, was he was a defensive backs coach, and yet he struggled to land elite talent there. Now you got this guy Heupel in here, and he's an offensive coach, right? And here they are signing some really good defensive players in the secondary. I mean, they've got edge rushers coming out the wazoo now all of a sudden, and yet you look at the offensive side, and outside of Nico Iamaleava, it's not a ton of star power on the offensive side of that signing class. What do you think's going on there?
Well, a couple different things. First of all, I think things have just they're just different now in the NIL era. There's no question that NIL in some of these cases is both it's a hindrance sometimes, and it's a plus for you in some cases. And there's no doubt Tennessee has benefited from that in some recruitments, and that's helped maybe help Tennessee speed things up a little bit in rebuilding the defensive side of this class and their roster. And you know, on the offensive side of the ball, I think Tennessee's going to get its fair share of good talent, knowing what kind of offense they run, knowing that players like that system. I don't think there's too much concern about that long term. They've had some close losses and some battles this year, and it's not signing day yet. So, you know, we'll see if anything changes there. You know, I remind people all the time, but this time a year ago, Tennessee hadn't offered Justin Williams-Thomas, a four-star running back they ended up signing. They hadn't offered Caleb Webb, a four-star receiver who ended up being a top 247 prospect in signing with the Vols. So a lot can still change between now and signing day. They still got some work to do, but yeah, so far it's been a class where they've done a little bit better work on the defensive side of the ball, aside from Nico Iamaleava. But I do think they needed some help on the defensive side of the ball, so they've put a lot of time into making sure they start to build up that side, that they're not just trying to have an okay defense. They want to have difference makers on that side of the ball. And when you look at the positions, you kind of touched on it. When you look at the positions where they've gotten guys, it's the positions that are most important in this day and age. It's edge rushers and cornerbacks. That a lot of times is what separates the great defenses from the not great ones. how good is your talent at those two positions? And they still need interior defensive linemen. They still need linebackers and everything else. But to me, if you're going to be good anywhere on defense, those two positions are a great place to be good. So I think that's a big, big deal for Tennessee. And, you know, again, they're not perfect. They're not winning every battle, but they're winning some important ones. And that's a step in the right direction. And, you know, if you want to, you know, we could talk all day about maybe some of the mistakes of the of previous staffs, but you know, Jeremy Pruitt's staff, I think sometimes their mistakes were going after and wasting a lot of time on, you know, five-star guys that they were always going to finish second or third for. I think this staff's done a better job of kind of going after more realistic targets. You know, look at where they're going at Bowling Green, Kentucky to get Christian Conyer. He's essentially an in-state prospect in this staff's eyes. Going to Alabama for Ricky Gibson, knowing that Alabama was not likely to push for him. You know, they've gone after realistic targets that they knew they could get who were still really talented players, and I think this staff's done a good job of kind of targeting those guys and not wasting as much time on players who were maybe long shots for them.
Ryan, a listener wanted us to ask you about Francis Mauingoa, the five-star offensive lineman from IMG who chose Miami over Tennessee last month. Maybe some rumblings on the interwebs that he might be looking around again. Anything to that?
Well, this one picked up a lot of traction really fast, at least on the internet among Tennessee fans. It came from a report, really just a message board post from a Florida reporter in another network, and I've yet to really hear anything of substance to back it up. So, not saying it's not true, not saying there couldn't be something to it, but with Mauingoa just having committed about a month ago or a little more than a month ago now, it seems a little early for me to believe that things have fallen apart or might be on the verge of falling apart that quickly. So I'm a little skeptical of that one, but it is recruiting and we know NIL was at least a consideration or a factor in his recruitment. So I'm certainly not shutting the door on his recruitment and saying he's definitely going to Miami, but nothing I've heard so far that would corroborate that. So we'll keep an ear to the ground and obviously stay tuned to GoVols 24/7. We'll have anything that changes on that front, if anything does. But right now it sounds to me like one of those, you know, sometimes you hear things and there's a kernel of truth to it. And sometimes you hear things like that and there's a lot of truth or no truth. It's hard for me to say which category that falls under, but maybe it's one of those things where there's a kernel of truth somewhere, but it might be overblown to some degree.
You know, Tennessee's made a name for itself as Punter U through the past 20 years or so. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, Ryan, but I understand that finally Tennessee's gotten in on this trend and has gotten themselves an Australian rules football style punter. Can you tell us anything about this young man?
Yeah, really fascinating how these stories seem to work. There's a group called ProKick in Australia that has kind of developed this pipeline to the United States in terms of putting out college punters, essentially taking rugby or Australian rules football players, mostly rugby, and kind of just developing them for a year or two and seeing what they can do. And you find a lot of good kickers that way. And they've now put a number of those guys in college jobs and given them a chance to make it to the NFL. And so this is becoming a pretty big trend, as you kind of alluded to. And they, you know, Tennessee, to their credit, I think saw an opportunity to add one here late in the 2022 class, knowing that Jackson Ross would have a chance to kind of sit behind Paxton Brooks for a year and take over as their primary punter next year. And he can always be available this year if needed in case of an injury or something like that. But I think it's a really nice pickup for Tennessee just from what I know about him so far. You know, I haven't seen him kick in person yet. The very little bit of practice we get to see, we haven't gotten to see them do anything. But I think he's going to give them the option to go rugby style, which this staff likes to do a lot of times to kind of take advantage of the role and the chance to have no return. So I think that he can do really well at that, but also has a strong enough leg to do kind of a traditional punt and get a lot of hang time. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out. But I think Tennessee is pretty convinced, and certainly the people at ProKick were as well, that Jackson Ross had the chance to be a pretty good one.
Ryan Callahan, GoVols 247 with us this afternoon. Ryan, last thing, we'll let you out of here. 2 weeks to go. Do you have an official season record prediction you're offering for Tennessee, or is that something you're still pondering?
Still pondering. I do kind of give it up until the last minute just to see. You know, injuries are always one of those things that you try to take into consideration, so you want to make sure nobody's getting hurt during camp that makes you think – something different. But, really, we don't see enough in preseason to change too much aside from just the general feel for a team. But, yeah, you know, what you hear in camp sort of aligns with what I would have expected of this team. I think they're going to have an offense that scores a good number of points. I think they've got a defense that has a chance to be a little bit better than a year ago, but still probably not loaded with difference makers at all three levels. So they've got to take advantage of the opportunities they do have and need guys like Byron Young to have a big year if they're going to take a step forward. So I think the schedule gives them some opportunities, but I always tend to go toward the middle of the most likely range, just knowing how historically things play out. So I'm still kind of on that 8-4 line. I think 9-3 is very possible. I think some of the 10-2 predictions that I always, you start to hear more wins being added to the total throughout July and August, those 10-2 predictions are probably getting a little bit ahead of expectations for me, but I understand the schedule gives them some opportunities. To me, 9-3, even a lot of things are going to have to fall Tennessee's way, and they're going to need some injury luck. So that's why I go 8-4. I think that Pittsburgh game is one a lot of people are sleeping on that they probably shouldn't. I think that's one Tennessee absolutely could lose, especially if they don't play well. And I'm not sleeping on Florida just yet, even though I think that's one on paper Tennessee should win. But, looking at the schedule, I think 8-4 sounds about right. This team should take a step forward from last year, but, other teams around you get better too. And I think Tennessee still has some tough games on its schedule that 8-4 to me sounds about right.
All right, good preview. 2 weeks out, he's Ryan Callahan. GoVols247.com. Follow him on Twitter, at RyanCallahan247. Ryan, always a pleasure. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. Ryan Callahan joining us, all Fan Run guests do, via the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. You check out Big Orange Phillies this Sunday from 1 to 3:30 p.m. Our pal Jabari Davis will be there, along with current Vols Princeton Fant and Latrell Bumpus, signing free autographed posters from 1 till 3:30 p.m. this Sunday at Big Orange Phillies, 6625 Maynardville Pike in beautiful Halls. Your chance to go and meet a couple of Vols and try out a new Fan Run sponsor, Big Orange Phillies. You can look at their menu online at BigOrangePhillies.com. We got to take a quick timeout. All right, Marcus, I think, has his top five. We'll unpack what Ryan had to say, and we'll open up the phones to you, 865-546-8200. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Ryan Callahan, GoVols 247. Bear, what did you learn?
We're doing really good at recruiting defensive backs. Like that whole, when you brought up the fact that Pruitt couldn't sign one to save his life. And
the point he made, I thought was really good, in that you got to find that sweet spot. Yeah, you want to recruit really good guys, but Pruitt was recruiting all those five stars.
Yeah, that jumped out at me.
And they'd talk to him, and they'd come and visit. But at the end of the day,
they ain't coming here.
They're going to Bama. They're going to Georgia. They're going to Ohio State. And that's understandable. And I think what Heupel might be doing a good job of doing is like, okay, we're not going to beat out Alabama and Georgia for the elite DBs down here. Let's target the guys that are just under – their requirements for and go hard after them. And that's Ricky Gibson. He goes to Georgia and they're like, they're slow playing him. And I think he had a legit Georgia offer, but we wanted him more. And I think he could tell that.
Is it to get out of Trustful?
Yeah. Like he's more important to us than he was to Georgia. Yeah. He was like a fallback for Georgia. Whereas for us, he's a guy and he's a good player.
Yeah. Speaking of Ohio State, I saw something. I didn't know if you caught the breaking news out of their camp. They lost their number one backup running back.
I was their third stringer, but even a third stringer for Ohio State is probably like a first stringer anywhere else.
You know who's going to be playing now? You got a really good shot at picking up those carries.
Who's that?
Dallin Hayden.
Oh, man.
Bummer, isn't it? I think I'm – I just – with the way our running back room is, as thin as it is, we could have really used Dallin.
Yeah.
But
good for him.
Yeah. Good luck.
Let's go back to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. D.R. Vol is up next. Good afternoon, D.R. Vol.
Good afternoon, guys. You know, I always enjoy these off-season topics. You know, Russ, honestly, I'm kind of surprised Spaceballs wasn't in your top five.
I didn't even think about Spaceballs.
Spaceballs is probably in mine. My GOAT is Uncle Buck. I love John Candy, anything he's in, and that's probably his most quotable movie to me.
It's solid. It's pretty solid. Who is the young girl, the kind of gothed out daughter that just did not like him at all that he ends up saving? Spoiler alert.
Wasn't she the girl that played in one of the Vacation movies?
Well, and who? Her boyfriend was named Bug. Bug.
Yeah. Bug.
Bug.
Yeah, that's a very underrated one.
You know, Barry, you said The Hangover. The Hangover was the first movie where I went multiple times to a theater to watch it.
That was hilarious.
Solid movie.
What was it I thought about off the God, what was it? I just told you guys the last commercial break. I hadn't even thought about it. Nah, go ahead, DR.
Well, I don't know if y'all consider it, but Life to me is up there because that's one of those movies like Con Air.
Oh.
Beyond, like, and you gotta watch it. Of course,
Life is great.
Life on TV.
Love, yeah, Life.
That's on my top five.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
You've never seen Life? With Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence?
And Martin Lawrence, yeah, a long time ago. It was pretty funny.
And you know what y'all are talking about, like comedies. Joe Rogan talked about that, like, especially the last 10 years, that, you know, trying to be more woke or politically correct, whatever, it's kind of knocked off good comedies, because honestly, the last one I remember where I just laughed out loud funny is The Interview. Have y'all seen that with Seth Rogen and James Franco?
Yeah, no, I didn't see
and
that
movie was literally canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't put it out because the studio was afraid that it would anger the North Korea guy.
I mean, he is kind of crazy, and he's got, from all accounts, it sounds like he has nuclear weapons, so...
Well, I'm hoping Marcus has a John Candy reference, because to me, he's one of my favorite comics from that era.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Thank you, DR Ball. Good to hear from you. Just without going through the list, yes or no, do you have a John Candy entry on your list?
I do.
Oh, okay. There you go. There you go. Stay tuned.
I just keep thinking of him.
Of who?
Of movies that should have been on my top five.
Spaceballs is pretty strong. I only go with one Mel Brooks, though. I'm going Blazing Saddles still.
About Half-Baked. With Chappelle.
It's pretty good.
Harlan Williams.
Yeah, no, very funny. I don't know that I'm going to put it top five. That was in heavy rotation back when Russell was in college. In the day.
I'm just waiting.
I'm not a grass expert.
I'm waiting for Bear just to start list. Like, I feel like the more you two talk, the more
you're
going to
steal all your...
No, I think, yeah.
All right. You're,
so I'm keeping my eye on the two of you.
Let's get Chris in here. He's been hanging forever. Good afternoon, Chris. You're on the drive. It's Fan Run Radio.
Hey.
What's up, man?
Yes, 1-4 for me are locked in solid. It was the fifth one. I couldn't decide between Dumb and Dumber, 40-Year-Old Virgin, The Hangover, or The Jerk.
The Jerk is...
Oh,
he
wow.
Hates these cans. Dumb and Dumber. You want to hear the most obnoxious sound ever, Russell?
My wife had never heard of The Jerk. First time she watched it, she was like, that was absolutely hysterical. This old Steve Martin. You mean I'm going to stay this color?
I was born a poor black child.
When he wrote that letter home to his mom, he was going to have extra money.
We can't say that on the air.
Yeah, as Patty promised him a job.
But number four for me is Airplane. Number three, Animal House. Number two, Christmas Vacation. And the comedy goat for me is Caddyshack.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty strong list, Chris. Not going to deny it.
And Caddyshack to me is just absolutely hysterical. I'm a golfer, so.
Hits home for you.
Golfer. We kill all the golfers, so lock us up and throw away the key.
I mean, you know, Bill Murray, Ted Knight, Rodney Danger. I mean, it's just hysterical.
Star-studded cast. Pretty stellar. Pretty stellar, no doubt.
Oh, and, you know, Bill Murray's brother is the one that wrote it. Co-wrote it.
Yeah.
He co-wrote it with that guy, Doug.
With Harold Ramis.
I think, what's his last name, Russell?
Kenny?
Yeah, Doug Kenny That was his movie.
It was Brian Doyle Murray and Harold Ramis, I'm pretty sure, who wrote it.
I think you're both right. According to Wikipedia, written by Brian Doyle Murray, Harold Ramis, and Douglas Kinney.
Yeah.
Okay, so three of them. Okay. I knew about the other two.
He fell off a cliff in Hawaii and died.
It was a quiff.
Oh, wow.
Don't answer that. All right, anything else, Chris?
No, that's it. Go Owls, 15 days. Juwan Jennings away. All right.
Hey, there you go. Good stuff. Juwan Jennings, Kelly Washington, Carl Pickens, Brew McCoy. I'm telling you, man, you're a wide receiver. You put on that number 15 jersey, going to be a baller. It's
big shoes to fill.
Brew McCoy eligible for Ball State, yes or no?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, he will be.
Like, if Josh Heupel has to drive to Los Angeles and wring the chancellor's neck himself at USC.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he could fly.
He's only transferred. I guess it is the third school too. But
yeah, it is.
Same with Dixon. This is his third school.
Who?
Lynn Jay Dixon.
Really? Oh yeah. Clemson, West Virginia. Does that count if you didn't play a game?
He was still enrolled.
I guess Brew didn't play at Texas.
So what's your list, Marcus?
All right, you got a couple minutes here, Marcus. Marcus Young's top five comedies of all time. What you got?
Number five, it was mentioned, which is why I was fearful. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I completely agree that John Candy is just one of the best comedians of his time, and it's a shame that he had passed away so young.
Those aren't pillows!
That's him and Steve Martin together. Just
they were good.
So good together. At number four, I was kind of torn between which sequel I wanted to go with, but I went with The Return of the Pink Panther. It was either that or The Pink Panther Strikes Again.
My dad loves those movies. I've never seen one. Peter Sellers?
Peter Sellers is so good. Sometimes I get some of the quotes mixed together with both of those. One of my favorite ones, and I believe it was actually The Strikes Back, he goes into a room he thinks is like a secret room, and he has like his light, and he's like trying to find out what's going on in the secret hallway. And the butler turns the light on, and he's standing on like a treadmill, and he's just walking in place the entire. It's just like these
good sight gag.
Yeah, simple jokes, and it's just I love Peter Sellers. Number three, this is Spinal Tap. Fantastic.
Yeah, okay, good. I like
good
it.
I've forgotten about that one.
Solid.
So all right. Those guys had a great group of movies. Number two for me was Monty Python.
He's going
Life
up
of
to
Brian.
11. Life of Brian. You're going to
I
gotta
go Life of Brian. The haggling scene over the beards and the stoning scene are pretty good. And finally, number one.
Jehovah.
Number one, I'm going to kind of go similar to you, I feel like, but I'm going Young Frankenstein.
It's a good one.
The greatest line to me will always be Abby who? Abby Normal. So good.
It's pretty good.
Not
especially
as weird as you thought, huh?
Black and white one. It's a little weird, but it's good. It's good. All right, we'll continue on to unpack that. Hour number two just around the corner. Marcus will have your top four at four. Stay with us. The Drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. The Drive.